Hey, coaches, welcome back to the Championship Vision Podcast. Coach Kevin Furtado again, your host. Today is episode 346 with Coach Mike Helmer. Coach Helmer has been the head varsity boys coach at Northland High School for the past 25 years. He is best known for his relentless pressure defensive system, which is the run and jump trapping philosophy. And over the past 9 years has had unprecedented success with it, including 7 straight state finals appearances, including this past year's state championship win, 3 state titles, National High School Coach of the Year finalists in 2019, and 5-time state coach of the year. But Mike has not always been successful. But before he began his pressure system, his teams were right around 500. In fact, for the first 16 years as the varsity head coach, his teams averaged less than 50 points per game, averaged 12-plus turnovers per game. For the last 9 years since installing his relentless pressure system, his teams have scored 80-plus points, averaged less than 8 turnovers per game, increased field goal percentage from 41% to 56%, led the state in scoring average 5 years, and were runner-up twice. Defensively, they led the state twice in fewest points allowed, and every year have been in the top 10 for fewest points allowed. Coaches, let's welcome the legend, Coach Mike Helmer from North Lynn High School. Coaches, welcome back to the Championship Vision Podcast, episode 346. And we're so excited to have just a legendary coach out in Iowa. Iowa, to me, is a bastion of just great coaches out there. There's so many great coaches. We have Coach Mike Helmer. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, just coming off his recent state championship, but he has built a great program at Northland High School. Mike, hey, just tell me a little bit about your recent state championship and your season a little bit.
So last year we finished second. We've been in the state championship game. This was our 7th year in a row. Last year we finished second. So the kids were kind of motivated to try to get back to the top. And, you know, to be quite honest, we lost a lot of talent last year, a couple of really key players. And, you know, partway through the season, we were winning, but probably weren't playing as well as we really had hoped we would be by that stage of the game. And there was a couple turning points in our season. One was we played a team that we got way ahead at halftime, and we had a really bad second half and did a lot of things incorrectly. We had quit pressing, so it was more half-court stuff than full-court stuff. You know, the boxing out, the little things, you know, that you see in film. And then we had a loss to El Burnett midway through the season. That was kind of a turning point. And then, to be quite honest, our last regular season game, we really went over it kind of frame by frame video wise. And we won that game by 11 against a pretty good team, but we thought we should have played a little bit better. And practices from that film session on really, I think, got us some great momentum heading into the tournament. And we played probably our best 7 games in a row down the tournament stretch.
So in Iowa, it's 7 games to win it, correct?
Yeah, so it kind of depends what class you're in. So we're in the lower class in terms of enrollment, so we have to win more games. There's more teams in that class. I think we have 148 teams in our class. Okay. So 8 will make it to the state tournament, and then the state tournament's played Monday through Friday. So we had to win 4 games to qualify for state, and then we played Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the state tournament to get to our championship.
So that's a marathon. I mean, not out here in Georgia. It's a lot different. We have 7 classifications, probably similar to what you guys have. It's over like a 3-week period on that. So it's 2 games per week, man. You got to talk about with your system. I mean, that's tough to do. You better be in great condition, ready to play every game.
Yeah, and actually that's kind of changed a little bit. It used to be our tournament games now are basically Tuesday, Saturday, and then the state tournament's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But it used to go We used to have three games in 1 week, and that made it pretty difficult when you're playing this style. So if you didn't have a game where you know, maybe got ahead or something, it could rest some kids. So one of the things I always say about our style of play is that we don't run sprints in practice. We don't, you know, we just play hard every day in practice, and we play full court most of the time. So I learned that from my dad. He was one of the winningest coach. Well, he is the winningest coach in Iowa right now. And his philosophy was always, why are we doing drills 3-on-3? We play 5-on-5. So we do a lot of stuff. Probably, you know, 75 to 80% of our stuff in practice is 5-on-5, and our kids are in really good shape throughout the season.
That's a good point. Let's talk about your dad, Bob Helmer. I'm reading here, 57 seasons. Mike, tell me if that's accurate. 1,264 games as head basketball coach. Talk about an amazing career he had. I've been studying him. What did you learn from your dad? What are some things you've taken from him?
So, you know, I can remember way back, you know, some people don't know what they're going to do with their life till they get a little bit older, but I knew when I was a young kid that I was going to be a coach. I would sit on the bench from the time I was about 6 years old. I would sit right next to my dad. I'd listen to everything he said to the players, and I kind of loved the, I just fell in love with the strategies of the game and you know, finding ways to win. And probably the biggest thing I learned from my dad, and you got to remember, this is before, really before film was being used at all, was the way he would scout, you know, go to other games. I'd go with him and we'd watch another team, and he'd have a scouting report of their players and their plays, and just the way he would prepare his teams to stop the other team's strengths and things like that. And that's always been a thing that I focus on. You know, one of the big things he always did too was wanted to outscore people on out of bounds plays, and that's one of our big mantras here too, is we want to hold the other team to zero, and we want to find ways to score on our out of bounds plays. So I learned a lot from him. I actually co-coached with him for 5 years at North Lynn when we won our first state championship here, and it was the first year he was here that we decided we were going to press full court, and we were going to do it make or miss. And we've done it ever since. So I think we're in our ninth year of doing that. Probably the best coaching move that I've made in my career in terms of, you know, making it easier for kids and just the style of play they seem to enjoy, and the success we've had seems to have come, you know, kind of from that style of play.
Did you learn that from your dad? What was the style of play? And I know the game, I guess, has changed, but there were great pressing coaches back when your dad coached. Did you learn that style from him, or is that something you just kind of picked up on your own?
Yeah, kind of a little bit of both. Like my dad, you know, early in his career, he did do some pressing, and when I early in my career, I did some, you know, diamond zone pressing and 2-2-1 pressing and things like that. But when my dad came here, I had been coaching my son's team, you know, since they were in third grade, and we were really little but very quick. So we did a lot of run and jump pressing growing up, and I was able to teach them that for many years because I had them from the start. So when he got here, he actually was the one that said, why don't we press make or miss? We were pressing mostly on scores, and you know, we discussed it for quite a long time between him and myself and Travis Griffith, my longtime assistant. You know, can we really do that against the better teams, and is that going to help us win down the stretch? And we finally just decided we were going to do it, and we've never looked back. I don't think there's a single game during that stretch of time that we have not full court pressed, make or miss, you know, for a great portion of the game. So, kind of got adapted. It's kind of ironic because I've actually coached against my dad a few times back when I was in Estherville Lincoln Central, and he ran this matchup zone that was just almost impossible to figure out. You couldn't tell if they were playing man or zone, and you didn't know whether to run your man offense or your zone offense. And they were just dominant when he was at Four City with that. And, you know, and then when he went to Waco, they started playing a little more full court, and we started playing a lot of full court here. And so when we got together, we just decided that's what we were going to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned about your practices, and you can probably get in that later. And I've studied your practices. I have the video of that, Mike. So, and Mark's going to help me out with the other portion. But what 4 hours of this great basketball? So I'm just promoting what it is. But if you don't have, if you're not studying Mike Helmer's system, you can get the whole system or you can just pick out bits and pieces. I just love. So tell us a little bit about putting together that video and the details involved in that. Did that help you out become a better coach?
Yeah, actually, I always think stuff like that. You know, I've most of the stuff I've gotten throughout my career, I've, you know, I'm a big believer. You got to be a kind of a self evaluator, and you got to always, you know, strive for improvement. So I love going to coaches clinics. I love sitting down with small groups of coaches and talking basketball. I love things like this, because just talking about your own stuff, you know, you kind of realize some things. But when they asked me to do that video, they've actually asked a couple different times, and it's, you know, the big thing is it's a time commitment for your players to have to, you know, go through the drills, and they, you know, they can't look bored and things like that. So I had to sell them first. And honestly, Breakthrough Basketball made it pretty easy. They came, you know, just a few times. We, you know, we had food in between, and we just kind of kept going from drill to drill. And it was great for me, because I had to organize everything just a little bit better so that we could go through a little bit more smoothly. I had different drills that we had, you know, added in throughout the years that we've been working on our press. And I got those organized into a better format, so that if you were to try to teach the press, you could kind of go in a logical order, you know, to teach it. So it was great for me. I thought it was great for the kids. They seemed to enjoy it. And, you know, Breakthrough Basketball does a great job of editing out your mistakes and your missed talk. So it probably ends up a lot better than you thought it was going to at the beginning, but turned out to be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. On that, what I'm a believer in, Mike, I'm a believer in systems. I think we pick up things from here and there. I want to know what a coach's system. Well, tell me a little bit about systems. Do you think the best coaches are actually systematic in their approach?
Yeah, and I don't think there's necessarily a system that's a one size fits all. I have always been a pretty big believer that you have to coach to your personality, and everybody's got a different one. You know, I got a good friend, Larry Carlson, that coaches over at Benton, Iowa, and we would always tease each other, because, you know, I was pretty intense and he was more laid back, and I'd say, now, how can you guys play that bad? And then I see you in the hallway and it's like kindergarten roundup. You're just talking to them like, oh, guys, we're going to make mistakes and this and that, where I'm a little more intense. We'll be like, guys, we can't play this way. So, you know, there's so many styles that work out there. But I think it's got to be something you're comfortable with. And I would agree with you with systems. You know, we obviously, you're always adapting your system, but you have certain beliefs. And I guess at Northland, we're very strong believers in good kids can accomplish great things. And, you know, I'm a big karma guy. I think if you have great kids and they're doing the right thing on and off the court, that good things will happen to them. And I mean, that's been very, very true throughout our last 9-10 years. Our kids sign a behavior contract before every season. And there's accountability from teammates. And as far as I know, and I know pretty well, because I have close friends who have kids on the family or on the team, and I've had family members on the team, and they really stick to those principles and those behavior guidelines. And I really think that's one of the things that pushes us to the top.
No doubt, Coach. Before you get into your system, I want to mention there's so many, I'm not going to mention all the great Iowa coaches, but these are guys that I know that I have actually spoken with: the great Don Showalter, Jerry Pettigrew, Ryan Shaw. I'm talking about just three. Those guys are first class master teachers. Tell me about the great basketball teachers and coaches in Iowa.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the things I notice about Iowa too, is everybody's willing to share. You know, Don Showalter is just an absolute icon with USA basketball, and he was a great high school basketball coach. I mean, he's been at every level. Matter of fact, when I got my 500th win, I got a message from him, you know, on the USA stationery within that's a couple awesome. Of days. So it just goes to show you, you know, and that's kind of what we try to preach to our team. There's so many good people willing to share so many things. And, you know, our offense is actually predicated. I think you were going to mention Schultz there, and he's one of the guys that we look to for some of our offensive stuff. So, been very, very lucky, you know, to live in a state where guys do share their ideas and they're passionate about it, you know, and they're willing to come together and help you learn from the best. And I think that's been, carried over from generation to generation. I try to give back as much as I can. If anybody wants to know anything about what we do, I'm always willing to share it, because I feel like that's how I got where I am today.
Yeah, sharing and growing the game, man. And that's, I really appreciate you taking the time out. Before you get into it, let's talk about your 56% win percentage before you put in the relentless pressure. And now you're a staggering 96% win percentage, 209-8 record, and 6 straight state championship game appearances. By the way, I'm not even close to that. So my team plays hard and we press. But that's really amazing. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to that point and then get right into the meat and potatoes of it.
Yeah, so I started off at a school called Lincoln Central, really small school. I was going to be there for 2 years because it was only going to be open 2 more years. And back in the day, it's not like today where it was hard to find teachers. Where you had to have a pretty good resume and get pretty lucky to get a job, where now you can find a job a lot easier. And I remember it was one of the last places I applied at, and I got the job, and they needed a head basketball coach, and I was more than willing to do it. The funny part about that is I was the head coach, I was the JV coach, and I was also the middle school coaches, because
That's right.
there weren't anybody. So a lot of times you'd go to a middle school basketball game, and then you'd drive and meet the bus over at the high school basketball game. But I was really fortunate to start there. Some of the people saw that the school was going to close and combine, and so they had already transferred out. But I was there for the last 2 years of that school. We were 2-38 while I was there. But man, when you got a young team and kids that just want to learn, you can see the progress as the years go by. And a lot of people don't understand that about coaches, that we're not in it for the wins and losses. We're in it to try to teach kids to be good people, and try to get them to reach their potential. And I loved my years there. I mean, there were so many games that we just about won, or we came close to, that we had no business, that you just really wanted it for the kids. Well, then that school combined with Estherville, Lincoln Central. And so I went to coach there for 6 years. I'd say we were just a little bit above 500 when I was there. It was really a blessing to be able to see a couple of my kids come from Groover of Lincoln Central. And when we combined, two kids were really high impact players there, one right away, and then one a couple years down the road, where they were both all conference players. So it was pretty neat to see them, come from that small school into a lot bigger. I think Estherville at that time was a 3A school, and those kids became successful there. So it was really cool to see that. And then, a fact that maybe I think you're going to talk to our girls coach. So at Estherville, he played for me from his sophomore year through his senior year. And then I just had an opportunity to come to North Lynn, which was closer to some of my family members. And when I came here, our girls coach, Brian Wheatley, was going to UNI to school, and he came over to be my assistant. And, 4 or 5 years later, the girls job opened up, and he took that. So it's been kind of a fun time, being able to coach the boys and learn from the girls coach, who was also a former player of mine, and see his success as well.
Absolutely, Coach. Hey, let's get right into it. Kind of share what you're going to be talking about today. I know you're going to have some great clips and coaches. I'll have these available for you, as well as the audio podcast. So, Mike, go ahead and just jump right in.
Okay, so the first thing I'm probably going to do here is just kind of go through. We have a run and jump packet. It's basically what we use at practice, kind of the I would say kind of the outline of how we teach the press from start to finish. So, our kids would know a little bit of this stuff going into a season, so we may skip a drill or two here and there. But I'll run through like our staple drills. And then I'd love to get to, I've got some clips on huddle that I'd like to bring up, and that can kind of just show you some of the stuff that I'll show you here on paper.
Okay.
And they're all state tournament games from this year that I got these clips from. Some are to show you, it's not always perfect, and some are to show you how well it works, when people are in the right places and things like that. So this here is obviously, if you can see my screen, I just got my cover on there. But our basic rationale, we always feel like it's fun for the players. If you ask kids at the end of every season, which we do, we kind of have an anonymous, they can kind of evaluate the season. We ask them certain questions, and one of the things that they always put that they enjoy is the scrimmage time. You know, that's their favorite part of practice is scrimmaging. And then if you look, they're the least favorite thing is always going to be half court defense and shell drill and stuff like that, or talking too much. They want to be in action. So one of our rationales is it's fun. It makes the game fun. It forces the pace of the game. Conditioning can become a factor if you're playing teams that don't work as hard as you do during the year. And we find that to become very, very true. It creates turnovers that turn defense into offense, and it's really hard to prepare for. And I really emphasize that it's hard to prepare for because we try to teach it so that it is a little bit unpredictable. So it's not only hard for other teams' kids to prepare for, but it's very hard for coaches to prepare for as well. And I know that just from back in the day when I coached at Estherville, and Lamar's did a little bit of run and jump, and it was very hard in a short period of time to teach your kids how to counter that. Some of the concepts, and again, these are all just, you know, pretty common sense stuff, but ball pressure, try to trap the dribble, try to stay ahead of the basketball. And what we mean by that is in front of it. We don't want anybody behind the level of the basketball. If the other team wants to pass it backwards, we're okay with that. You got to have a sprint mentality in and out of traps, because if you don't get out of traps quickly, then you're going to be at a disadvantage a lot at the other end of the court. And then we really try to emphasize our floor positioning a lot, like, you know, you would in a half court shell drill. You know, we want, if you're one pass away, we want you in that nearest gap. If you're two passes away, we want you to be able to, you know, rotate to the next logical receiver, things like that. And then the absolutes we just kind of throw in there. One of the big things we try to do is eliminate easy baskets. The hard part about that is you still want your guy that's deep on the press to really be aggressive in trying to get interceptions and steals. So you know, when we say limit it, we want to have a obviously a favorable steal to easy basket ratio. But you know, when you're applying that much pressure, you're obviously going to give up some easy baskets here and there. We try to eliminate fouls or limit fouls because we don't want teams at the free throw line. We kind of figure that sort of diminishes our returns on our press. And actually, Iowa went to a new rule this year where you don't get to shoot free throws till the fifth foul in each quarter
Right.
instead of
Same
the
here.
seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's helped us because it is, you get to reset each quarter. So if you have a bad, you know, 2 or 3 minutes where you commit some silly fouls, at least it resets at the end of that quarter instead of all the way through the half. So we try to limit offensive rebounds at the end of the press so that they only get one shot. And then probably the most important thing I think, and when I get, you know, when I hear back from other coaches that watch us play, I tell our kids the number one thing I'm hoping I hear is that we hustle and that we play with high energy. We try to emphasize enthusiasm and things like that. So we decided long ago if other teams were going to celebrate when, you know, when things happened, we were going to fast break the other way and try to score. And if, you know, and we were always going to be, you know, playing at a high level with in terms of energy, effort, hustle, you know, we're going to be the team doing those things. And then just real quick, and then I'll kind of hit the drills, but we actually categorize our presses into three different types, but we're usually in one type. So our red press would be, and you see a lot of teams maybe do this where they pick up full court, but they don't trap. They just kind of, you know, just trying to make you work the ball up the court. That would be our red press. I would say we're hardly ever in that because we're trying to force turnovers. Our yellow press would be aggressive, but not to the point where they're gonna, you know, get a quick breakout and a layup. So we may put the inbounder on the ball. We may put the inbounder actually back a little bit, but we're telling our guards to try to force the inbound catch as near to the baseline as we can, and then we're gonna run and jump switch from there. So when we get in our run and jump, whether it's yellow or green, I'll talk about green a little bit, and then I'll kind of talk about what we do. But our green press is more, we're denying the ball inbounds. So we're still pressing, run and jump. We're playing the guy that's guarding the inbounder back so they don't get a long pass or an over the top pass, and we're trying to steal the inbound. So we're actually in a green press, you're actually trying to get your turnover right there on the inbound. On a yellow press, you're probably trying to get it as they're bringing it up the court. Now, the green press, if you don't get that inbound steal, then obviously you're still trying to do that as they get up the court. So we're usually in yellow or green. Now, we have added, and we call it clear. And the only reason we called it clear is we couldn't think of another color or whatever to call it. So when teams start to clear out, we have a press we call clear. And when we run that, we actually guard the ball, which we don't do very often on the inbound, and we're trapping immediately and rotating to that next receiver. So it kind of gives the look almost of like a diamond press where when it comes in, you're going to go trap it and you're going to try to rotate up and get that first steal. And we do that. We had a lot of success with that down the stretch this year. Something we haven't had to do a lot in other years, but forcing them into timeouts because they can't get out of that trap, or forcing a quick turnover that gets us an easy basket, and then maybe we go back to yellow, a few possessions later. So we didn't do that. We wouldn't do that 10 or 12 possessions in a row, but we might throw it on for two or three, pull it off, and then put it back on later. So we called that clear. And again, we just guarded the ball and we would trap that first guy that caught it immediately.
Right. And Mike, there's no, sorry about jumping in, but
No, totally fine.
we like to do the same thing. There's really no press offense for that. I mean, you definitely get the team in a chaotic state, but your defense has to be ready to transition into that press quick, right?
Yeah, and we've really found over the years that just adjusting your pressure a little bit, even if you just say, hey, don't trap till they dribble, make them dribble to a trap or to a run and jump before we do anything. If you've been trapping and trapping and all of a sudden you're not trapping, now all of a sudden they're getting close to a 10-second count. They're not sure what to do. So we've had that. If teams are ripping through our press early, we'll pull the pressure back and make them kind of dictate where they want to go before we look to trap and things like that. So that's one way we can alter that pressure is by, all of a sudden we're not on the ball, and all of a sudden, boom, we're on the ball and we trap them. It catches them off guard. And if you do that two or three possessions a game, it's definitely worth doing. A lot of people will ask us what we do on misses, and I will try to show that just on a clip or two here in a little bit too. But probably the best way to describe it is we don't actually have, so if the ball gets rebounded on a miss, we don't actually have the guy standing next to that guy necessarily guarding him. So we have two guys designated as front row players, we have two guys designated as second row players, and we have one guy designated to go deep. It's nice to be able to designate like a point guard or an outside shooter to go deep a lot because they end up on the perimeter quite often. But sometimes, you might, like we had a kid a couple years ago that was a little bit taller, probably would have been a decent offensive rebounder, but he was a little bit slower. So we always sent him back on the shot to go deep. But I'll show you kind of that. But what we do with our front row guys, one takes the basketball, the other protects the middle of the court. Our second row guys, one protects right down the sideline on ball side, and one protects the middle. And then obviously our deep guy protects the basket. And he has to go right away. As soon as the shot goes up, he can look to take a long rebound, but as soon as they've got it, he's got to protect deep. And that's, of utmost importance. And then I'm going to, this drill packet, more than willing to send it to anybody. These are just some warm-up drills that we may or may not use early in the season, but I'm going to get to kind of the nuts and bolts of the ones that we run a lot. And I'll show you the main ones for sure here. So, this is one drill that, I mean, everybody uses to learn to guard the ball a little bit better. We just call it one-on-one full court, where you vary how much width they have to defend, but you're just going one-on-one. And we may say early in the season, don't steal it from the dribbler, just be up, have active hands, but don't swipe it from them. Then we might call it live sometimes too. And we'll cut the court down. Sometimes we'll make it, a full half of the court. Sometimes it'll just be lane lines extended. Just whatever you decide, we might put cones down to make it kind of in between that. That's a typical drill a lot of people, I think, do. And then these next four drills are really the bread and butter of what we do. So this drill here is a two-on-two drill, and what we do is we dictate what the offense has to do. So you'll see here, like number one is going to dribble, X1 will force him to the middle, or maybe one just takes himself to the middle, but X2 is going to stop the ball, and as he picks it up, since it's in the middle of the court, X1 will run past X2 as in a run and jump switch. And now they've switched men. So when the ball gets passed to two, X1 now has two, and X2 now has one and has to protect deep in the middle. Then you can see in the next diagram, we just repeat the process. So what we're doing there is That's the run and jump part of the run and jump press. That's where we're not trapping, we're just run and jump switching, and we're teaching them how to do that in the middle of the court. And that's what we're hoping that ingrains to them, that when we're stopping the ball in the middle of the court, we don't necessarily want to trap it because there's a lot more outlets from the middle of the court than there is from the sideline. And
Yeah,
then,
Mike, you find that switch. I do love the run and jump switch, by the way. It used to be more popular back in the day. Am I wrong there? You don't see it that often now, but it definitely forces the dribbler, usually the pickup ball, right?
yeah, and that's kind of what, that's why we protect deep middle. If we're facing somebody that's really, really good, we want that person to have to dribble to the middle with their left hand, and then hopefully we get it out of their hands. And then from there, it just kind of depends. Now, this is just a drill, but in an actual game, we might tell X1 that switched on to X2, you're now going to go up and force him up the sideline because he's not near as good a ball handler as number one. And we might take that reversal pass away. A lot of that just kind of depends on the personnel on the other team, obviously. Or
Sure.
we might just get back in that gap and we may play for another, if they come to the middle, we may run and jump again, or we may force them up the sideline and get a trap. And then our second drill here is the same type of difference. In this one, we will tell the ball handler, you have to drive to the middle, and then you have to reverse dribble and go up the sideline. X1 has to go cut them off, and X2 has to sprint from the back to get a trap. And then we tell number two, you have to stay behind the level of the ball like most teams would if there was a trap going. Otherwise, we'd have, we obviously would have more guys on the court rotating up. And this is just a drill to learn how to trap on the side. We teach them how to get their feet, make sure there's no splits. And we really try to teach them. We'll even put a guy deep sometimes and set and show them how far, if you get a great trap, how easy it is to read a deep pass because they've got to lean back to throw it and they got to cock the ball back. And it can make it really easy on your deep man. So we try to teach them that early in the season. Now, there's not a deep man in this drill, but we'll add one later to kind of show them how important it is to have a really good trap. And
Mike,
then go ahead.
let me jump in really quick. Trapping, what? Give me like some inside technique because I don't teach sliding. I teach sprinting to spots. I call it a sprint defense. Give me some absolute keys to trapping.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like when we, when you teach basic defense at the beginning of the year, we teach our kids you're not going to be sliding a lot. You're going to be sprinting a lot more than you're going to be sliding. So we work on that. But on a trap, our biggest things are we definitely want contact on the trap, on the ball handler. Very rarely are you going to call it for shoving unless you make it pretty obvious. Probably the biggest thing is come with your hands high. You'd be surprised how many times somebody will throw it right into your hands because they know they have to throw it past the trap. And even if they get it around you or over you, if you've had your hands high and you force them to throw a slower pass, that definitely helps. And then our biggest, probably the biggest thing we teach is you cannot let them split you. We don't necessarily, I don't care if you overlap, don't overlap, but your bodies have to be together. You have to make them pass around you because that's a lot more difficult to do. And again, one of those warm-up drills is a four corner passing drill with three guys trapping where you learn to trap and anticipate a little bit. But we really feel like ball pressure, getting your body on the dribbler, getting your hands high, and then not getting split are probably the three biggest keys to our trapping.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
And then the next two drills, and those are the last two I'll talk about because they're our main ones. I'll skip those 3-on-3 ones, but when you get to 4-on-4, they're the same basic drill. So this is 4-on-4 box where we're running and jumping in the middle, but we're also on the next row. Then we're teaching those guys, don't let somebody flash in front of you, know where your man is, play in the gaps. And so it's a 4-on-4 drill, much like the 2-on-2 drill we were doing before. And a lot of times what we'll do with this is we'll say, you have to dribble to the middle twice. And on the second time we hit the reversal man, it's live. And we don't go 4-on-4 a lot because we'll actually add that fifth guy in just to make it as realistic as possible. But when we first learned it, we did a lot of 4-on-4. And so you can see that's that run and jump in the middle. It doesn't change in the front. It just adds two more guys. And then the next drill is the same thing, except they have to go sideline and then we go from the trap. And on that one, a lot of times we'll just go live on the first trap. And again, we kind of dictate that the number two guy has to be behind the level of the ball and has to attack the sideline the second time. but we don't dictate where everybody else has to be. We try to teach our guys to be in the passing lanes and stay between man and ball as much as they can. The pass we're obviously looking to force, and in here it's easy to show them, is we want them to have to force the long cross-court pass instead of the straight down the court or middle pass. So we really emphasize that when we're doing these drills, that if they don't fill the middle, it's okay to, you don't have to be right on your guy, just be between him and the ball and make him throw that long over the top pass. And I think you'll see in a couple of these clips that we show too, that how well that works. And then again, we have a million other drills that we do, but they're not all, we don't do them all every day. We just kind of pick it based on what we're doing well and what we aren't doing well. And that's why I was going to say that two of the drills that we actually picked up this year that we do a lot now is we actually have a drill with 4-on-4 where these 3 and 4 guys start deeper, and then when the ball gets reversed, they really flash up the sideline because we noticed we were getting beat on that flash a lot. So we teach them, to use the proper hand and tip it away. So we have a sideline flash drill that we've added that's probably not in this packet yet. And then there's another one where we'll trap the ball right across half court, and then we let that guy pass out of the trap, but we have to sprint to the basket from that trap. And we call that sprinting out of traps that we added this year because we felt we were a little bit slow getting out of those traps. So those are the basic drills, I think, that we, those are the main ones that we use. And that packet has a lot of other really good ones too, just to teach anticipation and things like that. And then I guess the next thing I'd like to do, I got like it's probably 15 or so clips, and hopefully I can slow them down. Can you see that all right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, so I'm gonna, this first one's a miss shot, and so here's gonna be a miss. They just got the rebound, and I'll kind of put it in slow-mo here after they get the rebound. You can kind of see here our this kid that was guarding the guy that rebounded. You'll see him sprint out. He's gonna be a second row player, but then the ball gets reversed real quick. So he was going to go ball side, and he realizes now the ball is getting reversed. So you can see originally we thought the ball was going to go to the right. So we have a guy on the ball. We have a guy protecting the right side where it went. And our second row are these two guys here. And you can see right here, these guys are pointing. So the deep guy knows who he's going to take. And as this transpires here, you'll see we'll end up getting. So you can see they threw ahead to number four. Well, number four is their third best ball handler, and that's kind of what we want. We want the ball getting in other guys' hands. And now you can see we're perfectly set up. So they went from a rebound where most teams might, either walk it up the court, or depending, they may try to run it up the court, but they're looking for their best ball handler. He's now going to get it in the middle of the court, and we're in our run and jump press from there. So you can kind of see when he turns his head, that's, now this would be a perfect example of, and I put this on here specifically to show, if our little guard guarding the ball right now, if he run and jumps this instead of traps it, which you kind of want in the middle of the court, I'm going to pause it here. But if he would have went right here, if this player would have ran right to number four right now, this play would
Right.
have been over. And he didn't, but he probably should have. And again, this is where the unpredictability comes in. We're not on the bench yelling at that kid for trapping because he made a decision. This was a good place to trap. And that now you can kind of see everybody should be responsible for their man. And this guy should be in the passing lane here if our little guard would have came here, and they would have been in trouble. Now they end up
Right.
getting out of this. They split it and throw it deep. And I always like to emphasize this too. So now they have a 2-on-1 opportunity when this guy gets turned around,
Yeah, the
but
cover, yeah.
they've also got their worst ball handler with the ball right now. So
Sure.
we don't go out to the guy. We make him come to us. You can see our, he probably should be even a little closer to the basket right now, but he's making that guy make a decision, and look what happens. He panics and throws it right over, and this is a really good team at the state tournament. So that was the first clip. The second clip here, I'm just going to let it run to show you at the end here how it's important to have a guy willing to take a charge at the end. Because you can see right now we're getting the gap closed at the end there, but boom, he takes a great charge right there. And because they got out of control there, we got a good situation. Now this
Hey,
one, oh,
Mike,
go ahead.
can I add something really quick or jump in?
Sure.
So do you teach a lot of, in your drills, do you have a lot of transition in your drills, offense, defense, deep? Tell me how you teach that, because You got to work on recovery all the time, correct?
We do have a, the typical buildup drill that everybody will do that starts, two on one, goes 3 on 2, 4 on 3, 5 on 4, and ends up in a scrimmage. We do that quite a bit. I'll be honest, most of our transition work is just like we'll throw 4 minutes on the clock and it's JV versus varsity, and we're going to play full out. And the JV doesn't necessarily always reap the benefits of that short term, but long term, those guys get better and better as the year goes on because they got to learn to handle
Sure.
it all a little bit better. And then taking a charge, I mean, it's really important. You can teach taking a charge, but some guys are so much better at it. And our point guard this year was great at it, so he was at the back of our press. Now, this one here, I kind of wanted to show, like, a lot of times you're going to get beat, but if you don't let the guys, so this team we played had a definite point guard, and we were not going to let him dictate the game, and that's him get trapped. So he's going to get it out of there, and they're going to advance it to their third best player, and I'm just going to put it on regular speed, and you'll see him travel. That happens a lot when you get these teams playing at a speed they're not used to. So he turns, he's a little indecisive, and he makes a poor
Sure.
decision with the travel. This one, if we had a better trap, and again, this is a full court, they scored type of thing, and you'll see we're going to come from behind here. Now, this is a tough one because we try to come from behind, but now he's turned his head and he's coming back. And we always say, once you've come, you're coming. Don't slow
Yeah.
down. And I'll pause it right there. Now, he elects to jump because of the ball fake. We try to teach, keep your hands high, but go get that trap closed. And you can see right now, if there's a good trap on this guy, there's nowhere to throw it. We've got this guy covered. We've got this guy covered. And if our deep guy just sits at the free throw line and reads this guy, he's going to get to that pass. Now, because these guys jumped around and left it a little bit easier for him to make the pass, we don't get to it. But again, it wasn't the best of passes because he had to
Got
pass
it.
through the trap. We now have their worst ball handler at the 3-point line. If he wants to attack the basket, here's how we feel with this. If he attacks that basket right now, and our next player hustles, this guy's gonna throw a bounce pass because he's not used to being in transition. He's gonna assume when that guy takes him, this guy's open, and we got a great chance to steal that last pass. Now, in this case, and this happens a lot when it's the fourth or fifth best ball handler, they're just gonna throw it back out, and we gave ourselves a chance to get a steal. We didn't get it, but we still forced the pace of the game the way we
For
wanted to,
sure.
you know. This next clip then is kind of a half court. I'm gonna show you when we get in the half court here. And you'll see this guy screen away or kind of go away when they get organized here. So there goes there, and we teach this a lot. If he's going to wander away from the basket, we're going to go trap. And now we got 1, 2 guys here. We got an offensive guy here, an offensive guy here, and we've got our reader right here, our interceptor. And if he does a good job, and now this is what I like to show especially. So you look right now, if he would have went to trap a little sooner, look how they've run themselves right into the same area. That
Yeah.
happens a lot in high school basketball. And now our interceptor, he has to protect the basket and look to intercept. But right now they're in a poor position. He can guard both of them pretty easy. And our guy waited way too long to go trap. But you can see, even though he did, he read the guy's eyes. Boom, we got the tip. And it turns into a layup for us at the other end. And that was a poorly executed one, but we still got the layup at the end. This one I'll let run. I just wanted to show our deep man again how great of a play he makes. See how he doesn't. We really teach. Oh, shoot. I should have kept it on that one. Let me see if I can get back to that play there. See if I can go back up to that one. Right here it is. So you can see here when the play develops, a lot of times guys will run with that guy, but he's smart enough, and we've hopefully got it ingrained into him enough. You don't need to be on him. You just need to be able to read the passer and get there. And you can see right here, he does a great job, and he runs back and gets the tip, and we end up getting the steal. So I thought that was a great play by our deep man.
Hey,
Oh.
Mike, when do you trap? I mean, is there just reads? Is that obviously that's what you're teaching? You're just the players are actually reading vulnerability. What are you guys reading when you for your traps?
So most of the time, we're trying to read eyes and try to come from behind if we can. We try to teach in the middle to really run and jump that because the logical pass they make is usually the guy you're running and jumping to anyway. The hard part is we don't want it to be predictable, so we don't want there to be a hard set rule. We want it to be chaotic because we feel like for them, then that makes it, it makes it tough. to know what to do because we're not predictable. So if we don't know exactly what we're going to do, they aren't going to know. So
Exactly.
really, we don't discourage trap. I mean, if you're coming with your hands high and you're making them make a difficult pass and you can get a trap, we're totally fine with that. This is a great clip because this shows our deep man on defense on a miss. He's going to drive to the basket. And what I want to show you here is, okay, so he's supposed to go deep when there's a shot. Well, he can't do that if he's the guy shooting the layup, right? So right now, number 14 is our second designated guy. If our designated deep guy drives, we have another designated guy. You have to replace him then deep, and you'll see he forgets to do it. He's so focused on what he does that he runs up here, but look at how wide open they get it. Then we don't have anybody going back. And now they've got a run out. So that's a mistake we made. Because our second guy, as soon as he saw him driving, number 14 should have been getting back on that one,
Yes.
and he did not do that. This next clip is just kind of shows how if you get them playing at our pace, they'll make mistakes. So here he gets a rebound. They're trying to run past us and watch where the pass goes, right out of bounds. And this is the state championship game. So that's not like we're playing a poor team or anything. This is a really good team. It ends up being a 1 point game. That might have been the possession right there that cost them the game. Who knows? Now, this will be good. So here, I would like to see this guy force number 10 to the baseline to catch it because there's really no reason to just watch him throw it in. But we're in our soft yellow now, which means we're trying to keep them. We kind of want them to use their left hand, but we're not going to run and trap and have all kinds of chaos. We're going to make them decide when they're going to come. And we may stunt at this guy. We may run and jump, but we're not going to trap in the middle. We're in a soft yellow. And there you can see great stunt by number 10. He comes back to the ball. Now we've just switched him in because they kind of replaced each other. We're trying to keep him, force him to come back with his left hand. And boom. Because we're soft and not trapping, he throws it right in our hand. And I'll play that live. You see, boom, we get that steal. Oops, that's my fault. I got my cursor in the way there. And they get a run out there. This is another example of it where we're trying to keep it on the left side. And you can see now he's taken off on his own and we're chasing from behind. And really, who can they throw it to right now? One guy's an over and back. The other guy's going to get across half court. But if this guy's watching, we can make that adjustment. And we end up getting the steal right there. So, just another example. I guess it was a jump ball where turnover there. Here's another one where we're forcing them left and we get the steal. So, in this game, even though we were playing in a state championship game, their guards were really good, but not great with their left hand. The
Right.
first game we played, just the opposite. They had a point guard who was just great with both hands. We had to get it out of his hands. So here we were emphasizing in this half, keep forcing them left, keep forcing them left. And we made some plays. There's a good example there. And then this next one is one I wanted to show you. So I talked about how we adapted and did that clear when people were clearing out. So this one here, when we're in clear, so this means we know they're going to try to clear out. So we're going to trap immediately. 40, make sure they can't throw it to the left side of the floor. 14 is going to force his guy down and we're going to trap him right away. And they're not ready for it because we haven't been doing this the whole game. We just decided either a timeout or whatever to do it. And this is amazing to me, but when you do this, suddenly they're, you just saw the last couple of clips where they caught it maybe 10, 15 feet from the baseline. Well, now we kind of knuckle down and we say, hey, we got to catch it in that coffin corner and look where the guy catches it. He catches it right where you teach him not to catch it.
Right.
And boom, here's a perfect example of what usually will happen. 22 rotates up to take the pass away from the reverse pass. We got the sideline pass taken away, and you can tell this guy's not even paying attention. He's just running down the court. Now, I would have liked, and now Mason's coming up. There it is to take that middle, and it's perfect. We've got the steal, and I think I don't know if we end up scoring on that possession or not, but we definitely got the steal, and we're off and running. This is another example of the clear, but they run a really good diagonal cut, and I wanted to show you that. So we try to teach our kids to get in front of the diagonal cut. He took a bad angle to begin with to get in front of him, but if he gets to the right place, I'll pause it. If he's in front of that guy right now, look how well we have him trapped. We don't feel this is even an option. How's he going to make that pass if we keep that trap on there? So this guy should be rotating right here, and we'd have another steal right there. But they end up hitting that diagonal cutter. Now we're still in our press because he didn't get beat over the top, but hopefully we don't get beat on that at all. And then here's one we're running our clear where I'm trying to show, okay, that's perfect. If he takes this away and we clamp down on this trap, it's an awfully hard pass to get it to this guy who's actually just jogging out of there because he's supposed to clear out. And now we know we've got him. And I don't remember if they end up getting out of this or not. There's a pretty good look. Right now, 22 should be coming up to take that pass away. And if those two trap the way they should, this pass would be an impossible pass. And that pass, you know, even you start talking girls basketball, it's even tougher pass because they don't have quite as strong a
Right.
people trying to throw it and things like that. So, and here they end up getting it to the middle, which we, so, okay, if it gets to the middle, we're not, now we teach this very huge point. We do not run up to the guy in the middle and try to stop him because any good player at all is going to go around you. So we retreat and make them decide if he's going to attack us. And in that case, I don't remember what happened, but. And then here's our yellow press again. Now we've backed off. You can see, same game. We've changed our tactic. We're now not trapping right away. And now let's see what happens. We try to force them left. See how they're clearing out now. They're not really looking because we didn't trap that first pass. And everybody's right where they should be. This kid should probably be in front of his man, but all in the approximate right place. And here's the perfect example. When you get in that, they throw it right over and right out of bounds. You
For
know,
sure.
and again, you've seen that two different times, once when we're actually turning the press up, and once when we're not, where they throw it right out of bounds. So those are some really good clips. If anybody's ever interested in, you know, knowing more about the run and jump or wanting specific clips, I love going through the film and finding these clips because they're great playlists to put together for our kids to show them. So those are just some kind of examples of our run and jump there, both in the semifinal and final game down at the state tournament.
Yeah, I love that, Mike. I'm watching. What I'm watching is how is the team countering that? Like, are guys really the on the press offense? I didn't see a lot of people sprinting to the middle, calling for the middle post up. Teams just don't do that naturally. They're all kind of going away from the ball. Don't you see that a lot?
Yeah, especially teams that clear out. I mean, I'm a coach that used to do the same thing. So I would say clear out, just get out of there. You know, well then they get out of there. Well, now it's pretty darn easy for two guys to guard one. If they have to, you know, if they're clearing out and they're telling their players, get out of there as quick as you can. Well, obviously it's going to be easy for the deep man to cover two then, and we can rotate up and look for steals. So it just depends. You know, we play some teams that we've played, you know, all 10 years we've done this, and they get a little bit better at flashing to the middle. But again, you have to decide which guy you're flashing to the middle, and then we can decide, you know, how good a ball handler is he? Are we going to, you know, try to go get him one on one? Are we going to trap him? What are we going to do? So, yeah, there's a lot of different ways. And like I said, when somebody's successful against our press, that's when we really analyze that game and we try to come up with, okay, what can we do different with our press that will take away what they're trying to do there.
I love that. So is your press, I'm assuming it's never done. Like it's continuous. Do you trap in the half court and on all dribble penetration, or again, it's kind of based on reads from your kids?
Yeah, we give them a lot of freedom. One rule we'll have in the half court for sure is if your guy's going away from the basketball, you have the freedom to go trap the basketball and get after it. And again, you know, if you think about it, how are most offenses done? They're either started by their best player or they're initiated to one of their best players. So, you know, if your best player throws it to the wing and he goes to screen away, well, we're going to go trap the basketball and make sure they can't skip it to your best player. And if you throw it to a third or fourth option and they make a play, they make a play. You know, we even played, you saw that in the NCAA. There was a kid for Oakland that shot 300 and some shots and only seven were twos. We played a kid that shot 224 times this year and he only shot 12 shots inside the 3-point line. So we didn't care if he drove by us, we would hustle out to him. And if he drove by us on the press, well, what's he going to do? He's not used to doing that. If he makes a great play, he makes a great play. But most of the time, if you've only done that 12 times in your 23 games, you're probably not going to make a good decision. So,
Absolutely, coach. Hey, before you go, what are the teams that have beaten this, beaten your defense, beaten your style? What are they doing? Are they trying to match your pace? Are they trying to slow it down? What are the best teams doing?
I would say the majority of the games that we've lost have not been somebody matching our pace. It's been somebody that's been able to slow us down a little bit. And the shot clock has helped us a little bit with that because you can't really do that anymore in the half court. So, but the teams, I will be honest to say this, that, well, we've only lost 8 games in the last 9 years, so it isn't happening very often. But the teams that seem to be able to do that are ones that have multiple ball handlers. And when I say multiple, I don't mean two, I mean three or four guys that can really handle it. Because then, you're obviously going to get it out of trap sometimes into a next ball handler. Is it a guy that can make a play or not? And then we have to adapt if you have a guy that can. So, that's what we find is the guys. And it seems like every year, the one game that we may or may not lose is a senior dominant team with lots of good guards. So, and obviously you're going to face somebody no matter what style you play. You're not going to win every game, obviously. So, if it works 90% of the time, well, we can live with that.
Yes, sir. Hey, before you go, thank you for, sharing this insight into your system. I really appreciate that. And of course, coaches, you can purchase this on Breakthrough Basketball, great organization. Mike breaks it down in the four and a half hours of his entire system, including his offensive transition as well. Before you go, I have two questions for you. One is, people, we talk about building teams, but a lot of times we don't do a good job as coaches. There has to be a systematic way that we build teams. Talk about what you do at North Lynn to build your team concept.
So one of the things I think is really big is our kids play together growing up. We try to, from third grade on, well, really, to be quite honest, my daughter is a first grader and I ran the first and second grade girls program this year. So
Nice.
we have parents and coaches bought into starting kids early, and teaching them how to play from the very start. But once they get into high school, I think it's a natural thing when your defense, everybody relies on everybody else's, reads. That helps you build some cohesiveness. But as I said to you earlier before we started this, I'm a huge believer that good kids can do great things. And our kids are second to none in the way. I mean, I would challenge anybody, go out there and find a negative tweet that one of our kids has sent or something they put on Facebook or social media. It doesn't happen. We don't allow it. Our culture is to be good people, be good sportsmanship. Our culture is to treat others with respect, no matter what the score is. And that's on and off the court. So I don't have to worry about my kids on a Friday night. I know they're holding each other accountable. I know what they're doing and what they're not doing. And I really firmly believe that's one of our staple reasons that we're successful is we have kids that they buy into a behavior program at the beginning of every season. And to be quite honest, for most of them, it's nothing. It's something they're already emulating year round anyway. So we're very lucky to have those type of kids and parents. But I really think it starts with the type of person you're going to be. Great people seem to have the motivation to do great things, and sometimes vice versa. So I would say when you're building a team, you want to have high standards and hold people accountable to those high standards, and you'll see your team flourish quickly.
Absolutely on that. And it starts at the top, right, Mike? So you have to be, the coaches have to be ex exhibiting that those standards as well.
Yep, I totally agree with that. I mean, and especially off the court, you can't preach one thing and then be out and acting in ways you're telling kids not to. So, firm believer in that. And I tell my kids all the time, you can definitely hold me accountable. You want to hang out with me on a Friday night? Go ahead. You're not going to have much fun, but
That's right.
you're certainly not going to get in any trouble. So.
That's right. Hey, boring wins, Mike. Hey, all your best coaches are boring.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh man. I mentioned before I was going to ask you about momentum. I think, how do you teach momentum within your program? For example, in a game, you're going to have momentum swings. That's the game of basketball. How do you ignite that? How do you focus on that? How do you get that momentum going in your program?
Well, I guess when we're talking about the run and jump, that's obviously one of the ways we get games momentum during games right away. But, we talk about this constantly that once you get to a certain level in the season, you're going to be playing teams that are going to make runs on you. A great example is the team we beat in the state finals. We played them the second to last regular season game. We had a 21-point lead and they had it down to four in the fourth quarter. They really played a great third, mid third to early fourth quarter. And we had to answer that run with some kids hitting some big shots. And it's not always, the same kids. But we talk all the time about championship teams have to be able to make adjustments and you have to be able to gain the momentum back, or you have to be able to at least answer the bell when teams are making runs. So I really think focus, during a game and stuff like that. And then momentum from year to year. I really think success breeds success. You've got younger kids that want to get better, give them time to get in the gym, try to make it fun. And I've become a huge, huge believer in sometimes you can do too much. I think you want to have a happy medium. Kids are still kids. They want to be kids. 90% of the kids to 95% of the kids you work with aren't going to go on and play after high school anyway. So I always try to preach to our kids, I'm going to let you get as good as you want to be. If you want to be here all the time, I'll be here with you helping you. If you want to, if you're just wanting to be a good 3-point shooter and you're, working on baseball during the spring, then go play baseball. That's fine. When you're here, I'll work with you. So I think you gain momentum by building relationships too, and helping the kids achieve what they want to achieve.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Coach. I really appreciate you. Hey, thank you for coming on the podcast. And you are now part of the Championship Vision family, Mike.
All right, I appreciate that. Glad to be part of it.
And I know I'll have Brian on Thursday, man. I mean, talk about two all-stars coming on the podcast, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I'd highly recommend, if you're interested in this at all, he formerly played for me and they put it in kind of maybe a little differently with the girls and what he's learned and stuff like that. I know I'm going to tune in because I'm going to want to see what he has to say as well.
Absolutely. How can coaches get a hold of you before we go?
Honestly, my email is probably the best way. I don't know if I say it, will they get it?
And I'll share that as well.
Yeah, it's mhilmer at northlandcsd.org. But yeah, if you can put it on a screen to when you edit this, that would be awesome.
Yes.
And I will, if you email me, I'll gladly give you my cell number and talk anytime. I love to talk basketball.
Coach, thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. And I wish you the best of luck, Coach. And I'll be in touch again with you, asking
Okay.
a lot of questions, diving into this more.
All
Thanks,
right.
Coach.
I appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.